You're listening to the Nightlight Radio Network. This is Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, co-host of 21st Century Radio. We are happy to present this rebroadcast of our show on Nightlight. Enjoy. Continuing tonight, a series of programs I am hosting about unusual animals and humans who come to engage their presence is our guest Charles Russell. Spirit Bear, Encounters with the White Bear of the Western Rainforest, a Key Porter 2002 release, is the story of Charlie's quest to forge a unique relationship of mutual trust with the rare spirit bear of Princess Royal Island. Russell believes that many problems associated with bears, in particular attacks on people, are the direct result of their dependence on human food or garbage. He has been among the bears of the Rockies, of Siberia, and in Alaska, living among the grizzlies in childhood as well as brown bears. Being with bear, one could say, is what Charlie does. He does bear hugs. Charlie Russell is a photographer, a naturalist and rancher, pilot and Canadian wilderness guide, making Charlie Russell the perfect man to take us into the realm of bear and the very special white spirit bear story, among others. Thank you so much for being with us, Charlie.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, it was my dear friend, a mutual friend of ours, Gay Bradshaw, who introduced me to your work, and I want to thank her for that.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. I appreciate Gay very much.
Yeah, well, her amazing work with elephants and post-traumatic stress syndrome and understanding that all species have community, feeling, sentience, awareness. Look, your own childhood, which is in itself an extraordinary one, really was preparation for the life you've led as a man. In your book about the white bears, your brother tells a little story about your very infant life and a bear showing up on the veranda while you were in the carriage. Can you tell us more about that?
Of course, I can't remember because I was too young, but that was, we live right on the edge of a national park and on a ranch, and it's been in the family for over 100 years, and I'm still, that's where I'm talking to you from, and yeah, it's a place where there's a lot of bears, and I guess my father's story is that it was a very early introduction to bears, and I have been interested in them all my life. I don't know why it's such a strong interest, but it's something about how they've been treated and misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And my father got me really interested because he decided to make a film about grizzly bears. When I was about 20 years old, he wanted my brother and myself to be cameramen for this film, and that was in 1961, so over 50 years ago. And what I saw was an animal that was so different from the animal that we depicted in our stories all the time. It was a beautiful, intelligent animal, and yet the stories were all about violence, how they wanted to kill us all the time, and so that really caught my attention. How could an animal appear so differently and seem to act differently around myself and my family, and yet nobody told nice stories about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've talked on this theme with some other guests about how large predator animals that are so essential to the ecosystem have been painted by humans, who mostly are hunters and these animals' only real enemy, as being savage. And yet your work, also in Russia, which you're very well known for, and there was a beautiful PBS documentary, Walking with Giants, the Grizzlies of Siberia, about your work, as well as Bear Man of, how do you pronounce that part of Siberia? Kamchatka?
Kamchatka.
Kamchatka, a BBC special in 2006. So share with us when you, for instance, this decade you spent in Siberia. You're world-renowned, Charlie, for having opened people's eyes up to the fact that this is a community of species that have such intelligence and awareness. And you even said that, I read in one of your books that, for instance, the white bear may not have big territories, but the adult bear will have, the male bear in particular, will have an area that they keep around themselves to keep themselves safe. Talk to us a bit about how they live among each other.
It's a little different, too, again, about how we talk about it, but they seem to be, want to be social, it's to their advantage, I think, to be quite solitary. And because of their size, they're able to do that. They kind of dominate the landscape. They're so strong. They can, you know, if they run into trouble, they can usually get out of it just from their strength, and they're capable of creating. There's not many bear, not many animal, other animals that push them around except each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they have to be social, they are. They, because they're drawn to certain food sources like salmon and berries, and sometimes those food sources are quite, isolated or not in a big area, so that it kind of crowds them together, and in those situations they can get along quite well, but they don't choose to be there. I think it's when they can spread out, they usually spread out. I noticed that with the cubs that I rescued and raised. These were cubs that were in a zoo, and I learned that when they got to a certain size, they were there very small when they were young, and when they got to a certain age, they could hurt people because the zoo was so primitive that kids could reach right into their cage. So mm-hmm. You can imagine that, you know, they'd been teased a little bit, that became dangerous, and the cubs were just killed and waited for the next year to get some little ones again. And
yeah.
I would buy those cubs and take them out to my very remote cabin there and let them become independent. And they would be sometimes around. I wouldn't feed them for more than that first summer season.
Mm-hmm.
But they were never discouraged from being around me if they wanted to be. And so it was so amazing to walk with them every day and see, you know, what they did. And year after year, they were so close together themselves. They were so attached to each other that they initially they wouldn't separate. They looked after each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as they got a little older, they eventually would break up. They don't stay as siblings together all for very long. I mean, for years and years. But these animals stayed together till about 3 years old. And then I noticed that they would kind of get in a row when they found a dead salmon along the lake shore. And they'd fight over it and go on to the next one and fight over that one. And so I noticed that pretty soon they would go around the lake in opposite directions from each other so that they didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the way they separated themselves. But then when it wasn't competition, when the pine nuts came on, there was lots of pine nuts, they would join up again and go eating pine nuts together because there was so much in a small area.
So basically, if there was competition, it was over food, but they're not like other animals that are in packs. I mean, you'll hear about a mother bear and her den of cubs. Does a male bear take on a relationship to a female and her cubs and stay around them the way lions do in herds?
No, they don't.
Or prides, I think they call them. No, they don't. Interesting.
So
you're kind of like a bear, Charlie. You've lived like a lone rancher out there, though you have a beautiful partner and family. But it sounds to me like some part of your attraction to them, like I love dogs and I know my attraction to the dog. Your attraction to the bear is also that they're, it seems, you're a naturalist and you like the isolation of the outback.
Yeah, I do. I feel quite similar to bears, and I think that's what my interest was to them. I don't like, the biggest problem bears have with humans is being misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
We're so afraid of them that we make up stories about them.
Mm-hmm.
Are usually not very favorable for the bear. And that's why I went to Russia. I wanted to understand a few things about them for sure. I wanted to demonstrate, for instance, that bears weren't unpredictable and that they weren't dangerous if they lost fear of people. Because these two ideas were the excuse to kill so many bears around national parks even. But we have never done well at living closely with them and sharing our land with them because we are so afraid. And so I wanted to demonstrate that these ideas were incorrect. And I think I have, but I still have a lot of trouble convincing bear managers and various people that these animals can be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Humans can, you know, that there can be a very strong trust built between humans and bears.
As you point out, and as the films have shown, and as the pictures, even the photographs of you standing with a bear, I mean, I love the photograph of you fishing in the river with the bear standing right next to you, looking at you fishing as your companion, your just beautiful friend. And we're going to come to some of the stories in your book, Spirit Bear, but it's a really important point you just mentioned, because we see that with the wolves. Another show I've done is how our society, for the desire for hunting and trophies and, you know, super kills that are sort of set up for the person who wants to use their gun. I don't get it. I never have, but they do. And so we've been decimating the predators and therefore really wrecking the ecosystem and the relationship between, for instance, the wolves and controlling the deer herds, or because they want to have bigger moose, so they kill off the wolves. Talk to us a bit about this whole misunderstanding of the ecosystem between predators and other animals.
Feel good about killing an animal that you have no intention of eating, like a bear. There used to be a time that we did eat black bears especially.
Mm-hmm.
But that time has gone by quite a long time ago. So we tend to kill wolves and cougars and bear just for our own egos, and we, you know, we've developed this whole industry around it almost, but even before that, bears in particular were considered a very heroic thing,
mm-hmm.
an animal to kill,
yeah,
and so it, somehow we borrow strength from this strong animal to ourselves by killing it, which I have trouble with that as well.
Yeah, it just, it's illogical, on top of breaking the heart.
That's right. And then now that there's, you know, people are or bear view, you know, going out to look at these animals rather than to kill them. There's more people doing that now than there are hunters. But hunting is such a strong part of our culture because it goes back for so long that we tend to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks sillier and sillier all the time. So hunters are having a harder and harder time. You know, that type of hunter is having a more difficult time to look like a hero. One that, you know, especially when they come home and their daughter or their wife says, why did you kill that beautiful animal?
You
know, because they see the real animal on television, and it's often now depicted in a much different way than hunters depict it.
Mm-hmm. And I think one, our mutual friend Gay, I think Dr. Bradshaw has done so much to sort of take away this capacity that we have to sort of disassociate from our own violence. You know, to call violence heroic, that's what war looks like. And so we war on the land, we war on the animals, we war on the women, we war on the children. And all of this is changing. And when people like yourself have spent an entire lifetime in relationship to a species and has been able to preserve for humanity a genuine insider's experience, one can't help but come away loving bear.
Yeah, but the problem is that the hunter still goes out there, but he's having a more difficult time, as I say, to look like a hero. But it's still a strong part of a culture for it, but they have to tell lies almost about the animal to feel good. They tell lies to themselves,
of course,
and to everyone that would listen to them,
of course,
about how dangerous it is to be around and what a favor they're doing to get this horrible animal out of the way to make the world safer.
Well, you know, it almost, Charlie, do you think it's like almost as if society, we have to take our first break of the hour, but associates the scale of this animal with an inability to accept our own wildness within, and wildness within instead gets expressed as violence without. But wildness within isn't violent. Wildness is beautiful, really, when you tap into it.
Yeah. Wild is kind of a difficult word in a way, because what really is wildness? I mean, we kind of separate ourselves often now, I guess, through human privilege or something, that away from the idea that we're wild. So, and we've got into seeing wild as almost an entertainment for ourselves, and we like the idea that there's this unspoiled sort of, you know, world out there. It's getting smaller and smaller, and therefore more and more precious. But we like that idea. We don't include ourselves into it, and that's a real problem in understanding nature. We've separated ourselves from nature, and we've done this for a long time. We feel like we're a contaminant on nature. I mean, I'm talking about people that have kind of learned to like nature and go out and experience nature. They still feel that they're an intruder into nature, and this is a strange thing to me. And now I broke out of that. And my bears, the cubs that I raised, they were the ones that kind of taught me that I was a part of nature, and it was really just how, you know, how you saw yourself. You had you could be a positive part of nature or a negative part, but you were a part of it, and so that was a really nice feeling to feel a part of nature when I got thinking about it, and I really was able to live like that. And, you know, I'm not talking like it was an elitist thing, but, you know, what else are you if you aren't a part of nature? You can certainly be a negative part. We've sure figured that out.
We've perfected that. We've exported that as well. I mean, it's this global tragedy. But, you know, moving into a period of restoration, this is one of the reasons I've taken interest in these special relationships that some humans, like yourself, have formed with our kin species. And we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about your work in with Spirit Bear in this beautiful book, Encounters with the White Bear of the Western Rainforest.
This is Eva Sargent from Defenders of Wildlife in the Southwest. If you want to help the Mexican gray wolf, go to our website, defenders.org, hit the Take Action tab on the first page, and sign up for our alerts. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zahara Hieronymus.
Go to his website, Charlie Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, bears.com. That's charlierussellbears.com. So, Charlie, this beautiful book called Spirit Bear, Encounters with the White Bear of the Western Rainforest, was done by Canadian Geographic. And it was really the telling of you're accompanying some others who were going to make a film, Jeff and Sue Turner, and their film, Island of the Ghost Bear. Talk to us a bit about this journey and what attracted you to it.
Yes, this is a bear that back in my early lifetime was barely known about by anybody. Because it lived in such a remote, isolated place on an island, mostly on an island along the BC coast. It was quite a large island, very wooded, and so not many people saw this bear. And we decided to do a film about it around 1990, and it became very controversial because people were so enthralled with a pure white black bear that it became a strong tool to save a big part of the West Coast rainforest there, because people wanted to protect the habitat, and so it went from total obscurity almost to being out there where everyone was talking about it. And so it was kind of interesting to be involved with exposing this animal to the world and seeing all the ramifications of that. It was a beautiful time, though.
A very special kind of bear. I mean, you know, I've been doing this series on the white buffalo, the white lion, the white tiger, the white wolves, now a white bear. And in almost all environments in which these animals exist, they're called spirit animals, whether it's a spirit bear or white buffalo as the spirit buffalo. But share with us a bit of your own experience of this extraordinary bear, because are they different from the black bears? Are they different from the grizzlies? What makes this bear different?
Well, in the dark rainforest, the most striking difference is how they just shine almost in the darkness of rainforest. Shadows that would completely hide a black bear, this bear just shone out of. And so they're very spectacular visually. And it's not like the polar bear, which is, you know, often seen on ice and snow, and it's white, so it doesn't, you know, it blends in.
Yeah.
This animal doesn't blend in. And So that's spectacular, but whether they're different, it's pretty subtle. If that's the case, they also seem to though to stand out amongst themselves a certain amount. So there was a little bit of discrimination to them because there were more black bears than white bears.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't really severe. The natives knew them way back, and they were very special to the native people, like you mentioned. And like the white buffalo was very incredibly special to the Blackfoot natives. And so, the natives lost touch with them on the West Coast. And,
mm-hmm.
and they rediscovered them now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there isn't a huge difference other than that they, you know, it's a double recessive gene, which is doesn't change people's personality if we have one. Blue eyes are a double recessive gene. So there's nothing that's going to make an animal different that way.
It's interesting because one of the, I forget which chief it was at the moment, who was talking about the white buffalo and the reappearance or the white lion or others, and the fact that they stand out. You know, if one believes that all species have sentience, which I do, and all species have sole purpose, which I also believe. I have taken interest in this. It was actually a waking meditation where all of these white animals came out of the woods and spoke to me in a sort of an image, not in like a long discussion. But the image was that humans think that they're going out to meet these white animals. And that's not what the animals said. The animals said to me that they are coming out to meet humans in order to impart something very important to the human race at this time on Earth. And so it interests me that all of these white animals are extremely vulnerable in the environments in which they live because they can't camouflage. And yet in so many cultures, they're considered extremely holy. And there are some individuals like yourself and others who go out of their way to help the preservation of the species, whatever the species is. Do you think there is a message coming from all of these great animals coming forward?
Yeah, I felt it. I wrote a book about it. It was so outstanding. And, you know, when we did this film years ago, Island of the Ghost Bear, yeah, it really opened the eyes to people all over the world. There was something very special about it. And it certainly spoke to me in the way you described. And it perhaps directed me, you know, in a stronger way to what I've been doing most of my life, which is trying to show people how amazing bears are, and it's more and more aggravating that we are so hard on them,
mm-hmm.
because of our fear. It's mm-hmm. our fear that makes them hard, difficult for us to accept near us. It's fine if they're through cage bars or. You know, out in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
We've done them a great disfavor, the grizzly bear especially, by insisting that they need pure wilderness almost to exist in. This was a great tool for environmentalists to get areas set aside for wilderness, but it kind of did the bear a disfavor, the grizzly bear a disfavor, mm-hmm. because I think they're perfectly capable of living a lot near us and sharing the land that we dominate, which is the productive land. They don't need to. They don't do very well in the wilderness, you know, in the high mountain
right.
wilderness where we would like them to be away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start coming out onto the ranches like they do here now, we've allowed them to come out onto ranches.
But not everybody did. I mean, you were really one of those unique ranchers that left your ranch open to the grizzlies. And I think by demonstration and walking your talk, you've shown people that it's true, that, you know, that these can be members of our society and our community and where we live when we respect their needs.
That's right. And so, yeah, but it's happening more and more now. More and more ranchers, the newer generation younger generation of ranchers, they don't like it too much when bears show up on their property around their buildings, but they seem to be more law-abiding, more respectful of laws. In my generation and my grandfather's generation, these bears were so discriminated against. They didn't dare step on our land mm-hmm. without getting killed. And it's changing now. I kind of maybe led it a little bit.
Oh, no question about it. You certainly have. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing when a human being like yourself has dedicated, as you have, your heart and hands, your soul and your life to living among the bears, so that it's not just theory, it's not intellectual writing, it's life experience that's very true. You know, I think, actually, I interviewed somebody who was probably inspired by you, a young man named Tim McGrady, who runs Spirit Bear Lodge in British Columbia now, giving tours into the wilderness to see the bears. But that's all. And the amount of money now, I read this interesting study, they're making more money with ecotourism for communities than hunting. And so it's an interesting thing that by partnering in some fashion, without disturbing the habitats, I suspect, in ways that one can, it's a very profitable, it's kind of funny that going and being partners with these animals is more profitable than killing them, even though that makes sense spiritually. It's funny in a way, economically. So what then, Charlie, when you say you were among these white bears and something very special did happen to you, what would you say their gift to you has been?
Well, I guess that the gift to me is that I want people to understand these animals. I guess what I learned from them, they're so different from the way we talk about them mm-hmm. or tell stories about them, that I wanted people to tell real stories or good stories, because really, these animals are so wonderful, and really they don't hurt very many people. You would think from what all we do to them that they would do a lot more damage back to us if they had a chance, but they don't. And so this is what I've wanted to show people, mm-hmm. and I really worked hard to demonstrate. Some people think I'm being an exhibitionist or something, mm-hmm. trying to get myself killed by showing people that bears can be trusted. My photographs, you know, of people and bears together is to demonstrate that these animals are definitely trustworthy. You get what you give by most animals.
Yes, exactly.
If you give them roughness or violence, you get violence back. Not as often as we would do it if we were with ourselves. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it doesn't take too much to instill violence out of people, but it does out of bears. Mm-hmm. But we remember it, and we tell stories about that one incident of violence from a bear, and yet we're doing it so much to them. We kill thousands of these animals for every one of us that ever gets killed by them.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't fair. It's not. People, I think, want to get along better with nature and with that type of an animal. It's a symbol of being able. If you can get along with a bear, it's people. You know, I think. It's a nice feeling, and I think that's what it's so fast. So many people are fascinated with these large predators mm-hmm. because they treat us differently, like orcas, killer whale.
Yeah,
they get really strong predators where they're killing seals often, and even. You know, bigger animals, they will completely go around humans.
Yeah.
There's only been in the wild one person that I know of, maybe a couple, people ever being killed by them, and they seem to be accidents where they mistook people for seals. Why is that? I don't understand it. But grizzly bears are somewhat the same. They predate on other animals, but I've watched them stalking black bears, and it's amazing. If they did that with us, we couldn't live with them. But they get along with us, except that eventually they've had enough of bad treatment.
Mm-hmm. You
know, even in our national parks, we treat them roughly because it's an idea of management is that if you can keep them fearful of us and us fearful of them, that keeps us apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't.
And it's so contrary to the millions of years that precedes the Industrial Revolution, you know, where all First Peoples stories and indigenous practices are about collaborative living. And as you pointed out, hunting was for survival, not sport. It's considered, you know, weakness to kill if it's not for food, unlike our modern culture. That we talked about earlier. Look, we have to take our last break of the evening. If you're just joining us, Charlie Russell is our guest. He's written a number of wonderful books. There have been some PBS and BBC specials about him. I want you to go to his website, www.charlierussellbears.com, and you will fall in love with Charlie the way the bears have.
This is Deborah White Plume, Oglala Lakota, from the beautiful Pine Ridge Homelands, here with Zoe Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio. If you want to learn more about Oweaku or Moccasins on the Ground, our website is www.oweakuinternational.org.
CharlieRussellBears.com is the website of our guest this hour. Charlie, I want to ask you a question that might seem silly, but it interests me. Did you notice the bears' behavior being different around full moons than new moons?
I haven't noticed that. I haven't.
No.
Why? Have you?
I've noticed everything acts differently during a full moon. I have this theory.
I feel different during a full moon.
Yeah, well, I think that, well, I don't know. You're such a natural guy. You've been out on the range, up in the mountains your whole lifetime. Do you notice a difference in yourself between the new and full moon?
Not markedly, no. But I really, there is something lifting about it. You want to take note of the full moon just because, I think, because over your lifetime you've noticed a difference, I guess.
Look, we're not going to have a lot of time left, and there's so many things I'd like to ask you about, but maybe you could share with us. You've known many bears. They have names to you. Can you share with us a bear story of one of the bears you've come to love and who love you?
Well, yeah. This one demonstrates how intelligent they are. You know, bears aren't naturally aggressive. We make them aggressive. And so to be able to wander with animals that you've made kind of a point of, what I've done is I've made a point of getting along well with them and building trust in them. And it's quite easy to do that. You just don't do nasty things to them. It's just like getting along with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so as these cubs that I rescued, I keep coming back to them, but please also understand that there were hundreds of other bears in the area, naturally. I figured 400 bears. So you couldn't go for a walk,
wow,
hardly, without encountering them in a very short time.
Speaking of Siberia when you were in Russia,
yes.
Okay?
Yes. So one of my favorite experiences was to link up with a bear that I've known for 6 years. And we had such a close relationship with it. She learned that with my binoculars, I could spot dead salmon floating way out because they floated with their pectoral fin out of the water. And and I could see it farther than she could, because and I'd spot them out there, and then direct her to swim out to them and get these, because some years there weren't very many salmon, and every one was precious. I could do that by starting just pointing to the in the direction, and she would start to swim.
Wow.
Or I'd throw a pebble in the water as far as I could in the direction of the fish. She would swim out to it. Then she'd look back, and I could hand signal her farther out for hundreds of meters until she could see the fin floating above the water. So that was the kind of partnership that we had. She would be around 5 years old at that time. Totally independent, but, you know, normally. But she was dependent. She learned that we had, it was kind of a game.
You were a helper.
Yeah, it was a helper, and it was a wonderful feeling to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I could call her across the lake. If I had something, I'd be careful that I had something interesting to show her if I did that. But she would come a mile across the lake swimming.
It's beautiful.
To my call.
Do you find that you also communicate with them telepathically, just through your mind?
Boy, it's such an interesting subject. I've experimented as much as I could. But what I see is that they have that sense. They can understand people way better than I could, even other people. And so I'm not claiming that I have these skills very, very acutely, but I see it in them, and I wish I had it. I think we've lost it. You brought up something about that we've lost, you know, our ability to live. There was signs of people living in this area where I was, had my cabin in this remote place in Russia, and you could see the pit houses, and I did some research on them, and they were hundreds of years old, and they hadn't been, the natives had disappeared for violent reasons, human reasons, many years ago. But I was curious about how they would have lived there, because people weren't living there, and it was about the numbers of bears. We had lost the ability to live with that many bears without just killing them all off.
Mm-hmm.
But these people hundreds of years ago were living with them quite well. And I with the help of a Russian friend, I did research, you know, literature research on them, and found only one really good example of description of how these natives lived with them. The natives weren't real they weren't hunters, they were fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And he described these natives with herds of bears.
Yeah.
And that was a good description. I just, a herd of bears, but out in the tundra fields where the berries were, women were with their children, were picking berries with all these bears, picking berries around them. And the only only conflict, they would, once in a while, a bear would take a basket away from, full of berries away from people. But that was, they obviously weren't fearful of the bear, because they were taking their children out there and mingling with the bears, picking these berries.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've done an amazing job in the 20th and now 21st century, Charlie Russell, to remind us that wildness has a great deal of peace and order. And if we approach anything with love, love comes back. I wish we could continue, but we're out of time. I had one last question to leave you with, and it's just, may all your dreams of bears and for bears come true.
Thank you.
That's the end of the hour. 21st Century Radio is produced by Hieronymus and Company. Our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kortner. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, and remember, we do need more love in the world.